Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Impush-Chi, and as usual, we are always very, very honored and pleased to be able to broadcast with you, to you, live and in living color. Well, tonight's program is another special edition, and we are going to talk about a topic that we oftentimes talk about here at New Day, and that is, of course, the violations of our women and girls. We know that that is happening nationwide, and the thing is that for some strange reason, we still seem as a community to kind of want to dismiss what's happening. But now it's becoming so rampant, and it's increasing to the degree that it's like right in our faces now. It seems like people are a little more motivated to maybe want to do something about it. Well, we certainly hope so, and we certainly are going to not only encourage that, but we're going to kind of insist upon it as well. But the bottom line is, family, that this has been going on for quite a while, meaning that there has been certain types of violations against our women and girls in our community for quite some time. It's been swept underneath the carpet for quite some time. And now it's just so out of control. Very shortly, we're going to talk with the sister who I got a call from a little while ago. And, you know, I'm not surprised when I looked at this video with this six-year-old little young male, talking about some booty and how he can make your booty pop and all of this. Again, I wasn't surprised because we've sat back and allowed the music industry to do what they're doing, which is to not only exploit our people, particularly our women and girls, but to really create a situation where it is just not only acceptable, but it is like, you know, the thing to do, period. You know, that's what helps to make them who they are, such as the Lil Wayne. And in Philly, we got this dude called, what's his name? I can't even think of his name, but he's hot. I'll think of it shortly. But the bottom line is we let these people do this. You have not heard or seen any real massive application of addressing these issues with the music industry in particular, the entertainment industry, and how our women and girls are being not just projected, but the way they're being manipulated, you know. And so finally, the Black Women's Defense League has been able to come forward. We've been able to have our voices heard, and others are beginning to come on board as well. But at any rate, we're going to talk about that, the exploitation in the music industry and what our plans are in terms of preparing to boycott. But we're going to also talk tonight about, I'm sure you've heard by now, many of you, that the former producer for the Fugees, and of course that's Lauryn Hill and Wyclef Jean, at some point they were really, really, you know, kicking it out there. Well, it seemed like there was some other stuff going on another end of that spectrum, and that was the producer at that time for one of their hottest LPs or CDs was, in fact, raping his own daughter, and as a result, fathered six children. That's right. Fathered six children with his own daughter. He was sentenced on Friday, I believe, and now has, I think, something like 50 years. No, 90 years altogether. He was first given 50 or 40 and then later was given another 50. But the point being, again, this has been going on in our community for quite some time. Is just that it's now becoming a lot more visible. So what we're going to do is talk about that. We're going to also talk very shortly with a few brothers that are here in Philly who will be a part of a forum coming up on Saturday, which, again, will focus on the issue of violence, but violations in particular as it pertains to sexual offenses, rape and molestation of young girls and also of women. And we're going to talk about what is going to now happen to address that issue. So we're going to take a quick break, And what we're going to do, we're going to come back and we're going to talk with Sister Deborah White, who I just met a little while ago via Dr. Randy Short, who will be joining us very shortly as well. And we're going to talk about how we're letting our children degrade us and what we need to do as a community to address it. You are in tune to New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And my name is Cypress Chi, and we'll be right back. Indeed, and we're blessed. You are in tune to New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and as I indicated, my name is Empress Chi, and this is one of the official radio broadcasts for the Million Woman March and this Universal Movement, and we want to remind you that on October the 25th, the Million Woman March will kind of do its debut in terms of becoming an official social justice plus movement that is not just national but is going international. So we invite all of you to join us on October 25th when we are in front of the Justice Department, and the cry, the declaration will be, "We charge genocide." And at that time, we will be presenting the Justice Department, Eric Holder, and the rest of the crew with our not only petitions but letters of complaint, also preliminary briefs, because when we say we charge genocide, we mean it, and we are preparing the legal documents that will be entered into international courts, into the UN, in the spirit, of course, of Queen Mother Moore, who Earth Day we just observed last Saturday, July 27th, in the spirit of Mother Callie House, who, of course, talked about not the word reparations, but workmen's compensation and pension for the Africans who were forced into labor in the 1800s. And certainly we continue the legacy of El-Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, Malcolm X, when he said we charge genocide, as well as Paul Robeson. So here we are in the 21st century, and we are very honored that the Million Woman Movement is the first entity of African descent in the 21st century to make a national, international declaration that we charge genocide. Well, we're going to tell you more about that as we proceed, but for right now, what we want to do is get ready to go to our live line, and as such, we are going to again talk with the Sister Deborah White, who I just had the opportunity to meet a little while ago by way of Dr. Randy Short, who again will be coming on shortly. He's going to give us a report on a recent report that occurred on the campus of Howard University. And from what we're understanding, this happens rather frequently, rape on campuses. We're going to also talk to Dr. Randy Short about the update of the investigation with Malcolm Latif Shabazz, and of course that definitely will continue until answers are obtained, real answers. And we're going to also talk with Dr. John Johnson very shortly. You, of course, remember him. He's the father of Private First Class Sabina Johnson, who also was raped and murdered while serving in the U.S. Army. And, of course, there are some recent developments with that, including that there was a recent prayer vigil for Lavina due to the fact that her Earth Day was this past weekend, as well as the commemoration of her murder. So we're going to talk to Dr. John Johnson about that. And, of course, the struggle continues to obtain justice for Lavina, meaning answers to find out who, in fact, you know, killed her, raped her, etc. And why, of course, it's being covered up. Well, we know why, but, you know, we're going to get to the bottom of that, too. At any rate, we're going to move right along, and we're going to go to our live line. And, again, joining us is Sister Deborah White, who is going to talk to us about this gosh darn video that I just saw a little while ago with a six-year-old young brother talking about how he could make somebody's booty pop. And when you see the video, you know, I was going to play some excerpts for you. I may still do that. Right now I'm just trying not to. But, you know, sometimes you really need to know how ridiculous some of these things really are, okay? But at any rate, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to talk to Sister Deborah White, who brought this to my attention, and there's also a petition out there. But family, you all need to be, you know, really more cognizant and more proactive in dealing with what's going on in the so-called music industry. And even though this is on YouTube, that stuff is happening as a result of us allowing the videos to be on TV, allowing artists to come into our city and do certain things on the stages and so forth and so on. Where is our dignity as a people? When will we collectively, and I, you know, I don't even want to use the word collectively anymore, when will we as a people, period, say, hey, y'all can't do this, or we're going to hurt you in your pocket, at least. Okay, so at any rate, let's go to our live line, and we're going to open it up, and we're going to open up the line for you all as well a little later on, family, and we're going to open up the chat room in about 5 minutes for you as well. But joining us right now is Sister Deborah White, and I'm going to have her to tell you a little bit about herself and why she feels it's so important that not only we know that this garbage is out there, we do know it's out there, but sometimes you have to kind of, you know, get a little slap in the face as a reminder. Well, that's what we're going to do tonight, but with the intent of you getting involved. There's a petition that's out there. We're going to tell you about that as well. So let's go to our live line, and joining us now is Sister Deborah White. Sister, we have you on the line.
Thank you so much. I'm here on the line, and I appreciate you having me on your show.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So before we go into this madness that these people are doing with putting this little boy out there to do this really insane stuff, just tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm actually an actress, which made me interested in, when I started taking classes, I became very interested in the imaging of African-American people in the industry. And I just thought it was important to use my talents to become an activist because I saw that with these horrible images that the media uses to depict African-Americans, especially young African-American males, it dehumanizes us, it criminalizes us, and as long as the world can see us as less than human, it is easy to pick up a gun and to shoot one of our children. It's easy to hunt us down. It makes it easier because if I don't have a name, if I'm not a human, if I'm considered a different species or a Negro species, then how hard is it for you to pick up a gun and kill my son? The most important thing that I think about this video, even though this video is supported and done by the six-year-old parent, it's done for money. They're putting their child out there to represent our son, and it's done for money.
They don't even care that their own son is being dehumanized.
How did you run across it? How did you find out about it?
Well, I started a couple of pages on Facebook. And so someone sent it to me because they know that I'm interested in advocating for the African-American family, our culture, and our communities. And someone just sent it to me and said, look at it. And it was so appalling to me. This is the one thing I said, I've got to do something about this.
Right. Right. Okay. So let's tell everyone where they can go to see the video. It's not, and family, please note, we're not trying to, you know, really promote it or anything like that, but you really need to see what we're talking about because, you know, to see this, it just puts it into a whole nother perspective. To talk about it is one thing, but to literally see this little six-year-old boy, young brother, doing what he's doing, saying what he's saying, and, you know, with a whole bunch of white women, you know, with bikinis on and so forth, we really need some checks. We really do. So tell everyone where they can go to see this horrific nonsense.
Well, if you go to YouTube you can type in Booty Pop by Little Albert, and you'll find the original video, and you'll find others who have put this video on their page because, of course, they'll make money off of it the more hits that they get. So that's where you can find it. Just put in Booty Pop, BOOTYPOP by Little Albert, and the video will come up.
Wow. Well, needless to say, beat goes on, and so does the madness, so does the nonsense. Now, tell us a little bit about the petition.
The petition can be found on change.org, and it's sent to to Eric Holder, and it's requesting that the video be moved from the internet, but it's also requesting that the producers and directors will be properly sanctioned, as well as the parents, under the federal law, which says that this is a porno film. We are also requesting that the parents of the child be sanctioned, but also, more importantly than just being sanctioned, that they receive mandatory counseling along with this child, because the child, he is sustaining a large amount of psychological damage. So that's what the petition is asking for. But I'd like to also, if it's okay, I'd like the audience to know that this is indeed a child sexploitation, and it is defined as such because it's visually depiction of sexually explicit conduct. It involves a minor that's under 18, and it's important to note that images of a child pornography are also referred to as child sexual abuse images, and the child does not have to be naked for this to occur under that heading. So under the law, this is indeed a criminal act. But because no one has, or we don't have enough signatures, we can't really push the issue. It is against the law, but we need to let Eric Holder know, as African-American people, as American people, we're not going to take this. I want everyone to know that young black males are born with something that no other male in the United States is born with, and it's called the at-risk factor. They're born with it. They're at risk to die early. They're at risk to be shot. They're at risk for many, many different things that are negative in their life. And this just proves that we have, in my opinion, have become so disseminated due to racial integration, and like I said, that's my opinion,
as a community, we have kind of dropped the ball, and we are not looking at what's happening to us as a community and as a whole. Because what they're doing with this little boy will reflect on every African-American child in the United States.
Wow. Well, I mean, I certainly agree. And not only agree, I encourage folk to, you know, check out the petition, please. Tell them where they can get this petition.
They can go to change.org and put in Booty Pop, and it should come up. And it should, they should see my name on there in my picture, Deborah White. But they can also email me, and I can send them a link to the petition and to the video.
Great. Very good. Okay, my sister. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on tonight and you know, providing us with this information. And, you know, I want you to know that one of the things that my organization, which is, of course, the Main Women Movement, we have something called the Black Women's Defense League. And while our major focus is dealing with the defense and protection of our women and girls, certainly our women and our members and our brothers who support what we do, we also look at fighting other issues that are relevant to exploitation and so forth as it pertains to our children. So this is right on point because this is part of what we now have something called the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of Our Women and Girls. But it's all connected. So we'll definitely, you know, make sure that we do a follow-up with you. If there's any other, you know, things that come up that is similar to this or that you want to convey to us, please know that you have a place to come here, the New Day, to, you know, let folks know what's going on or to provide us with, you know, relevant information.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Oh, indeed. Now, before you go, I see that Dr. Randy Short is on board, and I want to see if he may have a comment or something on this issue. Again, he is the one that brought it to my attention earlier today, and then, of course, I had the opportunity to speak with you as well. Let's do this. Family, I'm having a little, okay, well, here we go. I'm having a little bit of problems with our boards tonight. It seems like sometimes it happens when we have a hot topic. But I want to bring Dr. Randy Short in, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what's going to be going on here in Philadelphia on Saturday. Because, you know, our people are starting to be more proactive. Sister Deborah, we have a situation here in Philadelphia where recently it was reported that a person in our community, when I say in our community, I'm talking about someone who is culturally active or, you know, culturally aware, you know, one who is recognized in the community to be of a certain caliber in terms of, you know, a go-to person for culture and other kinds of things relevant to that. And we received a report that there's abuse, sexual abuse that has occurred here in Philadelphia. And again, this is just one incident. Now we're hearing more. Now that this one has kind of surfaced and become real clear to people, now we're getting other reports. So we're going to talk a little more about that very shortly, too. But before we let you go, Sister Deborah, I want to bring in Dr. Randy Short and see if he has some comments for us on this booty pop thing. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. So let's see. We're going to try to open up his line in a minute. Again, we're having a little bit of a technical difficulty here. For some reason, our boards are kind of freezing up and being a little sluggish, but we should be bringing him in a few minutes. In the meantime, Dr. Randy Short, you just stay right there. We're going to be bringing you in
okay.
in a few moments. Okay, I think we might
okay.
have you now. Yeah, we got you. Okay, welcome, welcome as usual. Thank you for joining us for another segment of New Day. How you doing this evening?
Thank you. Oh, you know, I'm fired up, and we need to go from booty pop to booty stop. I love it. I saw the thing several months ago, and my first thing was to put it all over Facebook and say, this is an example of bad parenting. The parents should be under supervision of the courts for putting their child out like that. And where I want to go with it is because we have these discussions all the time, Sister Empress Filet, about people talking about the bad conduct of black men, but nobody dealing with the fact that a lot of black men are conditioned to rape, abuse, and hate black women, many times by their own mothers and aunts and grandmothers. We couldn't have this epidemic because children, boys, aren't born hating their mothers and their sisters. Something in the environment engenders this in the behavior. And normally we're able to say, well, peer pressure and all of that, yes. But in this case, you have a clear example of what I've seen. Mothers, even though the father's there, teaching misogyny and teaching the boy he's simply a penis, an object, without understanding that men, black men, get killed all over this planet because of the fear of the sexual competition that other men have with us and have no problems killing, like this boy, Anthony Cody Ingham, who got lynched on the 16th of last month. It's almost this month, I'm sorry, because a white male felt that he couldn't compete. So this black boy's dead. And so this, pardon my language, this cult of big dick is killing us. It doesn't build families. It doesn't teach respect for women. It, in fact, if truth be told, it's hedonism, because they'll take that same big you-know-what and screw another man in prison or outside. And so if a child is taught, a male child is taught, the only thing he's got is his ding-a-ling. He doesn't have a brain or anything else, and he has no other word. Two things happen. If women don't receive him and see his member as a divine wand from God, he's going to react in violence and rage. And he's going to assert power. And he's going to rape and take because his mama told him it was good. Or his boys told him it was good. So, you know, I want the violence against our sisters to stop. But we've got to destroy this culture that teaches black boys and black girls that they're just sexual objects. It's sick. And in honor of my ancestor, the Honorable Dr. C. Dolores Tucker, for whom I did work, she warned us 30 years ago that if we didn't do something about the arts and music, it would instill more violence and genocide against our people. And folks didn't want to hear her. Well, Tupac's gone, Biggie's gone, Sugar's on the run, and so many others are gone, have been shot. And for the billions of the few dollars that go through people's hands, which are quickly like a fool and money part ways, either ends up in the hands of white women, coke dealers, or someone, or some Jewish agent or some tax person, a.k.a. look at Lauryn Hill and all of that. For all of this hoopla that our young people are seduced into this stupid music, we're getting genocide in exchange the same way the people on the coast of Africa got booze, guns, and some trinkets, and we got the Mayafa. So I want to lift up this sister. I told her that when I saw it, I ranted. She turned around and did something, and I just want to honor her the same way I honor Ms. Tucker and say to her, I will push my friends to support this. And we need to remember Mrs. Tucker because they destroyed her. They put a $100 million lawsuit on her. She died of congestive heart failure. They killed her just as sure they shot her.
Wow. Well, I certainly remember when all of that went down and you know more about it than I really care to be honest with you. But I do, in fact, believe that we have to now do something and do something significant in addressing this sexploitation that we're now confronted with. it has gotten totally out of hand. And I dare say that it's not just because it's being allowed to happen, you know, of course, by us as a people, but the reality is that it's a plan. There has been a major plan into effect for a while, and now we're beginning to see some other aspect or some other levels of that plan. Now it's very popular for a young girl to call one another a bitch. It's now very popular for, you know, them to call one another certain kinds of names or to present themselves in certain kinds of ways. And so we're now looking at a generation who thinks that this is normal, ordinary, regular behavior. And again, those of us who say we're conscious and say we're concerned, we're not being proactive, you see. So it's really kind of on us now. We're either going to stand up or shut up, one or the other. And that is kind of what has to happen now. That's the call that we're putting out from the Million Women Movement and as women, period. We're saying to our people, we must now do something more than just talk about these issues. We've got to now really strategize and be, again, dealing with some direct action that's going to make a difference. So, Sister Deborah, again, I want to thank you for joining us tonight, and we look forward to having you back again soon, and certainly we'll continue to, you know, let everyone know about the petition. And, again, we're here, so if you need to get back with us or need to get back on again, just hit us up and we'll make it happen.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, too, Dr. Randy. I really appreciate your help and efforts in making this petition get out there and work for us as a people. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, family, I want you all to stay right there. And we're going to keep on with Dr. Randy Short because we have some other topics we're going to cover. We do have Dr. John Johnson will be joining us probably in about 20 minutes or so. Of course, he's going to give us an update on what's going on with the continued struggle and work to obtain justice for his daughter, Sister Lavina, Private First Class Lavina Johnson. We're going to tell you more about that shortly. But right now, we're going to kind of bring it into what's happening this weekend here in Philadelphia. Before we do that, though, we want to remind you that the report we got from several people, several sources, but the bottom line is, how can a father impregnate his own daughter, rape his own daughter, starting around the age of 8, and then have children? Why? That's kind of a rhetorical question because we know he had to be ill. But still, and see, here's the kicker, family. While we now have heard about this case or know about this situation, guess what? Oh, there's more of this going on than what we know. So we have Dr. Randy Short still with us, but what we're going to do is we got a couple of people that have something to say, and we want to hear from you. We're going to open up the chat room now as well, but caller, you're at 1613. We're going to bring your mic in and see if you have some comment for us for tonight. 1613?
Yes, Hotep. Hi, Hotep. This is EI Algebra calling in from Philly.
Oh, yes, greetings, sister. Yes.
Hotep, you and Dr. Randy Short, if he's still on. The sister with the petition, like, I don't even want to see the video. I'm just going straight and sign the petition because, I mean, man.
Yeah.
You
need to see it, though. I know you don't want to.
You know I'm already amped up and hyped and angry anyway from what we're dealing with here in Philly, but,
yeah.
Yes, indeed. True words that we have to do more than discuss this. You know, we have to be active. We have to be proactive and reactive and take whatever kind of action we can take, because this is really, really, it's been out of hand for a long time, and it's really, I mean, it's consuming us. It is completely destroying us. And if we are talking about the African people, our African nation surviving in, you know, on this planet, we have to take action and we have to do something. I'm very happy that I'm a part of a group here in Philadelphia that is taking action to do something about what's happening to African families in general. Because, I mean, we can't even relegate it to just the females anymore. I mean, it's happening to males. It's happening, you know, it's happening across age groups and everything. And all of these labels, you know, LGBT, and, I mean, come on, it's too much. You know, can we just have a male and female? Can we just have be decent males and females? Can we be decent African males and females? Can we do that? And the answer is
right.
No, we can't do that, because that's not a part of their plan, and they are at the helm at this time in terms of controlling all of these systems that they have us paying for, that, you know, that keeps on oppressing us and suppressing us and just destroying us. We must rise up against that. And so just real happy about what's happening Saturday here in Philly in terms of our community meeting at Claire Muhammad School at 1 p.m. And we're asking the community to come out and, you know, hear about what's going on in terms of this fake, phony, spiritual leader, educator that was using that disguise to, you know, work his way around our females, our young females in our communities. And
mm-hmm.
like we were talking about it tonight, and I think the most disgusting thing is that, you know, he had a history of it, and even more so that people knew and didn't say anything. You know, it's horrible. People knew and didn't say anything. And so this guy went from school to school to school, you know, still doing this, you know, the same thing that he always did. He did this throughout his life, and this is crazy. We cannot allow this kind of madness, this kind of aberration, this Yorugu, this incomplete being. We cannot allow these kind of beings to run roughshod in our communities anymore. We just cannot do that. You know, and
no,
so
that's right.
Ever since I've heard about it, I've been moving in the spirit of Yah Santawai and Zynga and the Kentucky Warrior Queen mode, because like those sisters that came before us, when the brothers didn't step up, or the brothers would not cooperate, or they weren't moving too fast enough, or they weren't doing enough, the sisters took charge and, you know, did what needed to be done to save the African family. Had it not been for them, you know, we probably wouldn't be here today. We would already be a decimated people. We would not exist anymore. You know, so this is the spirit that's ruling me and just keeping me, all of us, you know, all of us that are in this group, that we're trying to get this work done. We are getting this work done. And I know, you know, you had talked to me today earlier, and you were sharing, you know, some frustration. But I just want to say I'm so glad that you're still on board with us, and that I'm asking that you be patient with us, because we need you. We all need each other, you know. We all need each other, you know. And because we're all strong, like I was telling you the other day, we all bosses, BAWSES. We all got our things going on that we're doing in terms of our organization. I'm Shanudia, Afrocentricity International, Philly PA chapter. You're doing a national MWM. We got On the Move. We got UNIA. You know, we got the Philadelphia Maternity Child Collective. You know, we got the Almighty Wellness Group. I mean, it's a lot of energy going on in here. But it was good that we had some brothers at the meeting tonight. So we were really happy to find out that, you know, we're going to have some brothers at the meeting that are going to be supportive of, you know, like how we said,
that's
we laid
right.
it out, and the brothers are willing to be wherever we place them at, you know, and that don't bother their masculinity not one bit. You know what I'm saying?
I know that's
it don't
right.
bother their masculinity. They know they men, and they standing up for women, and they standing up for the African family, and they real comfortable with that. You know,
that's
so I was
right.
very happy that we had that kind of interaction tonight. So I just wanted to share with you, I'm listening. I got my work to do because, you know, Saturday will be here before we know it. And then Sunday,
yes,
I'm definitely coming. I'm planning to be, you know, at the rally. So, you know, I'm excited. You see, I'm amped up. I'm really hyped.
Yes, I can
tell.
Stay right there because what your brother who also wants to convey his feelings about what's going on, and I want to bring him in right now. We still have Dr. Randy Short on, too. He's laying in the cut, but he's right there listening. But I'm going to bring in Brother George because Brother George has conveyed, you know, that he's not only concerned, but he's definitely behind us, with us, rather.
Yes.
And I want to bring
him
in right now. Brother George, do we have you on this line?
Yes, do you hear me?
Yes, sir, we got you.
The brothers are very concerned about the situation here in Philadelphia, not just for now, but for the long term. And we had a meeting last night at the Sankofa House. It was 14 brothers there. And We've discussed because we have not really met but one time with the sisters, and we put out an apology letter, and we put out a mission statement from the brothers. But I realize now because we didn't put any signatures on that, we didn't sign our names to it. It really didn't have as much effect as it could have had if we had put our names on it. So we have to work around. The brothers, I just learned this today, so we didn't talk about, we only knew that the letter had kind of been rejected. I don't know who rejected it, but we felt that it had been rejected. It turns out that we missed some weeks of meeting. We had been meeting steadily every week at the Vernon House and then at the Hatfield House. Mm-hmm. And one of the brothers had a tooth problem. We missed about 3 weeks of meeting. There was some active emailing going on, especially around the editing of the letters and things that we had talked about at the Hatfield House, which was the last meeting we had before meeting last night. And at that meeting, we discussed the two items, the letters that we had, the apology letter to the sisters and actually to the whole community, because we're concerned about not only our children and our young sisters and young brothers, but we're concerned about the grandmothers, the nanas, the mamas, the sisters, all the women warriors. We're concerned about the whole community. So we intend, our intention is to be at the meeting Saturday. You know, we tried to have a last minute meeting with the sisters. We see that that's not going to happen. I'm going to have to text a lot of brothers tomorrow saying that the meeting that we thought we may have had tomorrow night,
let me ask on that, Brother George, did you talk to Sister Pam?
Yes, but and that's when I thought the meeting would be on, at least with some of the sisters. You know, we didn't
right,
know that. So I haven't talked to Sister Pam again. Brother Comey was supposed to talk to him. I think she tried to call me while I was on the line with the program, with the blog talk. And I couldn't get back to her. So, to my knowledge,
she and I were scheduled to meet with the brothers tomorrow.
Okay, and I'm
going
to leave it like
that. She didn't tell me anything different. Right, she didn't tell me anything different.
I asked Brother Comey. Okay, that's great. That's fine.
Okay.
I asked Brother Comey to get in touch with both of you, but I had not received the information back from Brother Comey yet. So I have not canceled anything.
Okay.
Concerning tomorrow.
Okay.
So that's still on, and we will still be there. And I'll make sure of that. So we discussed all kinds of things around what's going on in our community, and a lot of it we tend to think the suppression and the oppression of information, of not talking to one another, has been something
right.
that's been put in us since we were taken from our motherland and brought
right.
here against our will. And there's quite a lot of healing that has never taken place around that. And there's quite a lot
right.
of bad energy that has come along, even though the ancestors are keeping us in this fight, keeping us in this struggle. We still have a lot that we have to deal with that we're not dealing with. We tend to, like, let it go. We tend not to talk about it. We tend not to be active about it. And we're trying
right.
to change it because we know it's involving the future generations as well as those that are here right now. So we are definitely in this fight.
Okay.
I like what the sister just said about brothers being at the meeting that the sisters had tonight, and that they're going to be there solid in support. We intend to do the same thing. Those of us who have been really meeting around this ever since we learned about it. Because as you already stated, this brother that brought this particular part of it on is a person that we really respected, and most of us, all of us, had no idea that
uh-huh.
he had this kind of background or done anything like this. This was definitely not in the character that we thought the brother had. So we have to have some checks and balances around knowing who is around our children. And we spoke about that. We also spoke about there should never be males by themselves with females, students or, you know, children. That should never happen. And we talked about a lot of things, but we agree with the theme of Saturday's meeting at Clara Muhammad School, which is no more secrets. That's
okay.
what has to end, because we know that there's been secrets kept by both brothers and sisters, and that
mm-hmm.
that has to change. We have to stop that. We have to put everything out there, and this is a time of revealment. This is a time of truth. This is a time where things are coming to the light, and we understand
mm-hmm.
that. We have to you know, be in that light. So
that's right. And if I may, Brother George, I just want to add, because we have people listening who are not from Philly and therefore aren't really familiar with what we're talking about specifically, and just to reiterate, there have been reports, family, of molestation, of rape, of exploitation, of sexual assault in the Philadelphia community, but again, not just to say a generalization of the Black community or the African community, but specifically pertaining to people who are recognized in our community as either spiritual representatives or leaders or cultural representatives. So this is a little different. This is not just a blanket kind of thing we're talking about. We're being very specific, and the reports have come in such a way that it has been very, very painful, because these are people who we've studied with, you know, had political classes with, did cultural events and things with, naming ceremonies and things of this nature. So it's a very it's a very hurtful situation, because these are people who were trusted in the cultural, conscious, political context within the community. So here we are confronted with a situation that has to be addressed,
because young girls have been affected in particular. Older women have been affected in particular. So we're now confronted with this issue, and it has to be dealt with because our youth and our mothers and so forth have demanded it. And so what you're hearing Brother George talk about is what some of our men are now, you know, preparing to do, and understanding that they must now step up and step in and address this issue in a holistic way, but in a very direct way as well. And then, of course, we've heard from Sister Iya Adua, who, of course, is one of the sisters who represents the Concerned Mothers and Sisters group. And again, on Saturday, there is a program here in Philadelphia. It's the First Step Initiative, because we have never done this before like this. So this is just the first step, but it's a giant step in that it will now begin to bring about how can we, how should we develop codes of conduct in our communities, et cetera, et cetera. This is a powerful dialogue that's getting ready to happen, but it's going to also be explosive in that it's going to convey, as Brother George has said and Sister Iya has indicated, some people knew. Some people knew that rape and molestation was going on in our community, and some said nothing, which means
right.
that there are some that this happened to that it may not have happened to if people had known, you see.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, this brother was operating under what he has on his card, the Sacred Order of Ma'at, Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
This brother was, to us, a priest. He was doing many baptism
right.
ceremonies, African wedding ceremonies, rites of passage programs, reason sessions, counseling, sunset ceremonies. And what we've learned that he has been doing against young females has hurt us, and it has made us angry at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So we as black men, as African men, as brothers and babas and grandfathers, I mean, we are already targets. I mean, when you look at what happened with Trayvon and numerous others, when you look at all of the ancestors who were taken out of here, taken out of here not by the Creator, but by assassination before they were even 39 years old, or they, you know, at young ages, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, all these people who have gone before us and have been taken out of here, and now we have this in our community. We can't stand for this. We have to honor the ancestors, and we have to honor our heritage, our culture, and do what is right under Ma'at. We can't just, talk Ma'at. We have to be Ma'at.
We have to do Ma'at. We can only be Ma'at if we do Ma'at, you know?
Exactly. That's what I had added to the letter. I mean, and we added that to our letter, that we must do Ma'at. It's not just talk. It has, you know, our ancestors didn't have a whole lot of explanation for that. They didn't have to use all the words of truth and balance and all. It was understood what that meant, what that is, and where that came from. So I agree with you. We have to do it. We can't just talk.
Yeah, exactly. And it just would have helped if the letter was addressed to who, you know, the letter, you know, needed to be to, and then who it was from. And then it was selective in terms of who received the letter, you know. And so if it was to all of, you know, the concerned mothers and sisters, then that's who the letter, you know, should have went to. And that was some of the challenges that we had, in addition to, you know, the fact that now, you know, at this late date in terms of the meeting, now the brothers want to meet. But we've been trying to, we have been working and reaching out, you know, ever since we found out about this incident. And I think for us, the real kicker, I would say, for us was when we went to the protest and brothers said that they were going to be there and they weren't. That was heartbreaking for us.
Well, I learned about that on July 4th. Let me say this first. We did address our official apology. We meant that apology to be to the sister who brought this to the light, who actually was molested.
Well, we can't tell, but it's been more than one sister.
The letter says to our sisters in particular and the black family in general. Now, what I'm feeling though is the letter would have been much better received if we had put our names to the letter as the people who had agreed to it
right.
and who had discussed it and talked about it. I think that was more of an impact. We did address this letter to our sisters in particular and the black family in general, and it was meant to also be given to the sister who came forth but did not want to continue to come forth. You understand what I'm saying? So
right.
we wanted to make that clear, and we also wanted to make clear in our mission statement. And I know there were some things that weren't agreed to, but we wanted to make it clear that we were not in this for the short term; that we were in this for the long term, and that we are, you know, we are planning to put things in place that will. We wanted to stop any of this that's going on in our community. So
yeah. Well, I tell you, brother, we are looking forward to working with the brothers in Philadelphia and beyond to eradicate this across the world in terms of our African communities. We're looking forward to working with the brothers after Saturday. We are looking forward to that. We want to keep open lines of communication open. We want to work together because, you know, we are because you are, you know, and you are because we are. So we can't do this thing called life without you, without
right.
our African brothers, without our African men. And you can't do this thing called life without us. You definitely
That's
can't
true.
Do this thing called life without us, you know. So
and we have to set the right example for our children. Our children must know.
No doubt, and that's what happened. That's why it was the way it was brought was that for the community to handle it. And so those of us who stepped up to handle it, you know, and you know, we were waiting.
Yeah.
You know, we were waiting, and we kept waiting. We got tired of waiting. I know. Like I said, y'all, Shantua and Zynga, the Kentuckys have been riding me. Ever since I heard about this. And it's just, you know, it's just that something has, we have to do something besides, we have to do something more than has been done at present. So we look forward to having this meeting on Saturday. We look forward to building and constructing with the brothers. We want to put safe communication pathways in place in our communities for our entire families. You know,
right.
because there is a perversion, there's a sick perversion going on, not only amongst African men, African women, and our children, as the sister who called in about the booty pop can attest to. And, you know, I mean, it's just this madness has to stop because
right.
we plan to be here. We are going to be here. We are going to be here. We're going to, African people are going to be on this planet. And so we have to do what we can, everything that we can, to make that so. We owe our ancestors. We owe it to continue their legacy. We owe it to the Africans to come. And we owe it to ourselves as the Africans who are here.
There you go, Ashe. And
okay,
everything you just said is very positive. There was the brother who authored the letter did tell and Sister Pam heard him say he would not be at that demonstration. Other brothers, too, at the Hatfield House, we learned, were not going to be able to continue working with us because they had work, they had to go to work and they had to do things. So we we admit that we had to find out, we had to admit to ourselves and find out last night. We termed it as who is in the game, and that we are in the game, and that we're not turning our backs on this. So,
yeah, this is definitely not a game, brother.
Well, it's not a game.
No. I'm going to need you to use another word.
Yeah,
it's definitely not a game. But if you in it to win it with us in terms of, you know, us maintaining ourselves as sane, productive African people, yes. This is what we want. Yeah.
We get in trouble using English and using the wrong terms in English. That wasn't meant to be thought of as a game. It's just the way it came out last night. But we know that it's about, you know, who we are and where we stand and who we stand with.
Well, with that said, Tammy, I want both of you to stay right there, Sister Ea, Brother George. We're going to go to another caller. Someone's been waiting for quite a while, and we thank you, caller, for waiting and hanging in there with us, because this dialogue is important. But, caller, you're at 9505. I know you've been waiting, and we appreciate that. You have a question or a comment for us tonight.
Peace and blessings, Sister Empress Chief, Brother Wyset. How are you?
All right. Hey, Brother Wyset. Good to hear you.
Yes, good to hear you, too. I'm just, first of all, I just want to thank you for all of your activism, you know, past, you know, present, and I know in the future. Yesterday was the first time that I attended the men's meeting, and
okay.
I think that one of the things that I need to say this so that there's no confusion, Brother Kumi did send me a message and say that we are meeting tomorrow at the Sankofa House at 6:30. So that way, so that there's clear clarification that we are going to be meeting.
The brothers are going to be meeting?
Well, I mean, I think the brothers are going to be meeting, and I see your name, and I see Sister Pan's name. So I said, yes, meet the sisters. And I'm just,
right.
you know, getting the message from Brother Kumi. So he sent that message. So I figured that I would make sure, because I know that, you know, I heard while I was listening that for whatever reason it wasn't happening, but I just think Brother George just hadn't gotten the latest message.
Okay, right.
And okay. I just want to communicate, well, first and foremost, and I think that the sister, what's sister's name again?
Ea Adjua.
Sister Adjua, okay. I basically made a comment that, and part of what we have to understand is I am because you are, and you are because I am.
Yeah.
You know, and you are absolutely right. There have been times when brothers have dropped the ball and sisters have had to stand up and do what they needed to do in absence of that male presence. But I think that we also understand clearly, you know, but that there have always been men who have had to do what they needed to do. What I was glad to know and glad to hear, and even more importantly, glad to feel, is that when I was at that meeting last night, it was very clear that the brothers would be there to support the sisters, and we were honest in that during, you know, that there was a gap where we had kind of dropped the ball, and I think one of the things that I was pleased to know is that the brothers there were secure enough in their manhood to be able to admit that, but at the same time pick that ball back up and basically run with it and do what needs to be done. One of the things that I was thinking about as I was listening to the conversation is that we really have to understand, and I'm not, and when I say that kind of rhetorically because I know that we all know, the problem that we're about to deal with and that we're going to face and address is something that has been longstanding in our community.
Yes.
And that mothers have protected boyfriends, family
yep.
members and things of that
yep.
nature. This thing has been ongoing. And one of the things that we always say in the culture when I have conversations with brothers and sisters is that if we don't handle our business and within the culture, how do we expect those individuals who don't know to step up and respect us if the people who are supposed to know are not handling our business?
And
so that's
exactly what's happening. That they're not They're not respecting us. You should hear, I know you've heard it, brother, all of the conversation about these, you know, Attorney Corbin, he says the armchair revolutionary, the insurrectionist, and, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about this, the lackadaisical or lack of activity of the so-called conscious community. People talk about that all the time now. We are at that level in terms of, you know, us respecting and knowing of one another. We're already there.
I agree with you 100%, and I think that you know, I try to see everything in a spiritual light. And even though this has a lot of negative ramifications as it relates to this behavior, because, you know, I am also a person, you know, because I am in a cultural community, have been near this brother, have, you know, seen him perform rites and actually have done it, you know, together in conjunction. So obviously, as you can well imagine, when I heard this, sisters, you know, who mentioned it to me and asked me if I knew, it just, to say that it threw me for a loop, I mean, it just, like, really killed my spirit, and it really hurt me. More than anything else, I have two daughters that I am, like, they are my world. So, I mean, so it, like, just devastated me on so many levels to know the brother, to also know the sister, to also know the family, and then also, you know, to be a father with daughters. I mean, you know, and then also to be an educator. You know, I'm also, you know, an educator. So all of those things, it just came at me. But,
and you know what, brother, can I just want to share with you, I had the same experiences too. I taught with that brother for 11 years. He took my son through rites of passage, you know. I taught with him rites of passage classes. You did the brothers. I did the sisters. I did the lesson plans. So that we could execute these lessons. We co-taught together. We had conversations about scholars and books and African ideas and African value systems. I helped him design his card. That card that George you were talking about, I helped him design that card. So I feel you strongly on that, Brother Wassett, when you say, you know, as an educator, you know what I'm saying? As a mother with a daughter and a grandmother with a granddaughter, you know? So it's just, that's part of my energy too, and part of my rage, you know, in terms of doing something, taking some action to solve this situation, to help put it to rest, in terms of us establishing some safe communication pathways for African families, because that's the nucleus of this whole situation, is that Africans were not communicating with each other about an African that turned into a Yoruba.
That's right. I just wanted to finish my statement real quick, and then I'll exit so somebody else can get in. I just wanted to say that on a spiritual level, I think that the Creator is giving us an opportunity to use this as an example to fix things that have been broken for a long time. And I think that not only that, you know, there are some very strong African-centered spiritual key people that are a part of this that not only can really make this situation right, you know, but as Brother George had alluded to before, because we have already begun planning out long-term solutions because, as the sister said, Sister Ajua said, this is something that we have to directly address right now, but then at the same time, we have to begin to put things in place for the long haul, because now one of the things that we have to do is we have to teach our children, because if you think about it, and obviously I'm not blaming anybody, but we have to, you know, when you think about somebody in the culture being able to do this, we have to sit down with our grandchildren, you know, with our nieces and nephews and daughters and talk about those things as it relates to, because one of the ways that this happened is that, and I think this is key, this person used their culture as a way to enter that person's space and gain their trust. You know,
right.
And that is so dangerous, because one of the things that we're always trying to do to, you know, to advance our children is to build relationships. And so now we got to even be careful about those individuals who are building relationships, but they're not really genuine relationships. You know, I just want to say that I think that this is an opportunity for where a lot of us are hurting. And I need the sisters to understand that I know that there's some I don't want to really use the word anger. I'll say disappointment.
You can use the word anger. It's okay.
Well, no. But no, I don't. Let me.
I'm talking about on our part. You can go here.
No.
Say
but
that.
What
it's
I want
okay.
to say that, and towards the brother, there may be a little bit of disappointment. But one of the things that I want the sisters to understand is that you have to understand how hurt the brothers are. The brothers are hurt. They're very angry. They when I say that they want to do something, they really want to do something. But the other thing that we also understand, and I've heard this being echoed on numerous occasions, that we have to operate in the spirit of Maat. We also have to make sure that we do Maat. And I'm going to say again that I just feel glad that the sisters that I know and the brothers who are working on this thing are individuals that I've worked with, that I've connected with, and I just feel so confident that I know not only are we going to come to a solution that we're going to be able to agree with and that we're going to be able to work in conjunction with one another, but we're also going to be able to plan some things where not only will we be able to put some things in place for the conscious community, but also make some things available for our people in general. Because, we all need healing. You know, it's just not the conscious community. Because, you know, we all need healing, and I just want to say that I'm glad that I'm a part of this circle, and even though my name might not have been signed on the letter, it was signed in the universe.
All right, I say.
That's a great, strong statement, and I did get an affirmation from Baba Comey. I got an affirmation on I texted him while we were on the line.
Okay.
I just want to add that as a father of two sons and a daughter, and now having eight grandchildren, five granddaughters, and three grandsons, and having gone through with some of them this crisis in the Philadelphia school system of them trying to close down schools, where I, you know, attended a number of meetings, auditorium meetings, to keep the school that, you know, we were fortunate to keep the school that two of my grandchildren go to open. But, you know, this whole thing is an attack on us. We have to deal with all of this, but we definitely have to deal with what's at hand right now. And when I say deal with it, I mean we are putting things in place, and we are going to work with the sisters and the brothers to continue to do what we have to do to make this right.
All right.
And, you know,
go ahead, sister.
No, I was going to say, like I said, we welcome the opportunity to work together to, you know, bring some permanent strategies and solutions to not only this situation, but to additional challenges that African people continue to have. So, you know, we welcome the opportunity. We do.
Well, I want to thank all of you for, you know, really helping to bring this segment into more clarification and really manifestation. You know, I want to thank you all again. We're going to get ready to bring on Dr. John Johnson. And while we've been talking about rape, molestation, violations in our cultural, conscious community, spiritual community, we want to get an update from Dr. John Johnson, whose daughter was also raped and murdered while in the military. The relevant thing about that is that Brother Randy is, okay, I got him out there now. We want to also make sure that, because see, a lot of our young adults, some of them, well, not a lot, but some of them are planning to go into the so-called armed forces.
Even though we tell some of them not to or whatever, the fact of the matter is they are.
Yes,
and we need to make them aware of some of the dangers. And so I'm going to bring Dr. Johnson in a few moments because he, of course, and his family has had to go through a horrific experience of having their 19-year-old daughter go into the armed forces, you know, particularly because of, you know, the whole thing that many of our youth are confronted with. Here's a way to go to school, you know, here's a way to go to college. And so, unfortunately, you know, it did not turn out that way. And we need to help our young adults to know that these things do exist. These are some of the dangers. So hopefully you all are able to stay right there. I'd like for you to meet Dr. John Johnson. I'm going to bring him in, and he's going to give us an update on what happened this past weekend with he and his family and the community in celebrating the life of Private First Class Lavina Johnson, who was at the age of 19 years old, murdered. And, again, we share this story with all of you because I hear too often some of our young folks preparing to graduate from high school and, you know, talk about going into the service in order to be able to go to college or to further their education. We, being a conscious community, usually, you know, tell our children that's not the move to make. But at the same time, we know that sometimes decisions are made against our will, and we need to be clear about what can happen, and in this case, what did happen. So, family, we're going to bring on board now Dr. John Johnson, who has joined our family as it pertains to fighting for justice. He is standing for justice for not only his daughter, who was, in fact, murdered and raped, but also for all of our people and our children whose voices need to have, you know, some kind of hearing. And so that's what we're here to do. So we're going to bring in Dr. John Johnson. Of course, he is the father of Sister Lavina Johnson. And the struggle does continue to obtain justice for her. Dr. Johnson, do we have you on this line?
Absolutely. I'm here.
I know you are. How is
feeling? Thanks for having me.
Indeed, indeed. Well, welcome to this segment, Dr. Johnson. Thank you again, as usual, for, you know, for coming in and, you know, making sure that we continue to stay abreast and on point as we fight now with you and your family and others to obtain, you know, the truth about what happened to Sister Lavina.
Okay.
Again, we're just going to kind of recap for those who are not familiar with what happened. I'm going to ask Dr. Johnson to just kind of give us an overview, and then we'll kind of get brought up to date as to the prayer vigil that happened this weekend, and what the family and the team that Dr. Johnson has put together is still doing to make certain that what happened to Lavina does not happen to anyone else's child, and certainly to find out who did this. So, Dr. Johnson, you got it.
Okay. A couple of things that I'd like to clear up. Number one, my daughter is referred to as PFC Johnson. She was actually Private Johnson when she was raped and murdered. For whatever reason, the Army saw fit to promote her post-mortem to PFC. For whatever reason, it's beyond my understanding. As far as her going to in the military to get money, that story is a little bit more detailed than that.
Okay.
I have five children. My first three were boys. Then we had Lavina, and then I had a second daughter, Lakeisha. Lavina was 2.5 years older than Lakeisha. So you can imagine they were in grammar school together. They were in high school together. And so they talked, and they were very, very close. They both talked about going to college. This is what presented a problem for us. Lavina came to me one day. She always invited me to accompany her to sporting events, football and basketball. Now, how many 18-year-old daughters like to run with their daddy? Just to give you an idea. We're on our way home from a basketball game, and this was her senior year. In fact, this was her last semester. So on the way home, she asked me, "Dad, are you going to have money to send both Lakeisha and me to college?" I said, "Levine, I got it covered." She said, "Well, you're retired, and so how are you going to pay for both of us to go to school?" So I said, "Levine, let me worry about that." I said, "Because if I have to work two jobs so you ladies can go to school and finish, I'll do that." A couple of days after that, she came to me and she said, "Dad, I don't want you working two jobs." This comes from an experience that I had when she was about 8 or 9. I worked very diligently to keep my wife home. So I, at one time, was working two jobs. I was gone practically all day. I went from one job to the other. One job was 5 days, the other was 6. I wore myself down physically that I got sick, and I went in the hospital actually overnight, and they just said I was just physically exhausted and needed rest. So they let me come home the next day. So I'm lying in bed, really, really trying to recuperate. Lavina came and sat at the head of the bed, and she held my hand, the whole time I was asleep. Her mother came in there while she was sitting there, and she said, "Lavina, aren't you going to eat?" She says, "I'm not going to eat until my daddy wakes up." And so my wife says she sat there praying. She did not want to be raised without a father because a lot of her friends were from one-parent families, and she thought she was very, very blessed to have her father home. So me getting sick, she just really had a problem with it. Well, at any rate, I woke up, I saw her sitting there, and I said, "Oh," I said, "Hey." She said, "Are you all right, Dad?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Oh, okay." So she got up and went and ate her dinner. My wife said, "Boy, your baby wasn't going to move until you woke up." So I think when I talked about having two jobs, I think my daughter started having reflections back what happened to me when I tried to do it, and I was a lot younger then. So I think she made up her mind, "No, I'm not going to let my father go through that." So her thing, this is what her plan was, to go into the Army, get money for school, make sure that we sent Lakeisha to college and let Lakeisha graduate first, and then all of us could, kind of team up and make sure she got her education. So she went into the Army. Now, you got to understand two things. Number one, I'm a veteran. I was in the Army for 3 years. I went in right out of high school, but I really came from an extremely poor family. I did, and I actually went in to earn money to go to college. And by the way, the money that I earned while in the Army didn't pay for my education. It paid for my books, probably. I actually worked a full-time job. I went to football, to college, first of all, on a football scholarship, but then that didn't work because the coach wanted me to play football and run track because I was a decent athlete back in the day. And I didn't want to run track, so I dropped out. And then I played professional football for a couple of years. Then I gathered enough money to go back to school. And when I went back to college, I paid my own way through, plus I worked a full-time job. I started working, believe it or not, for the Department of the Army as a civilian for almost 30 years. In fact, my wife and I both used to work for them. That's how we met. Now, my point being that we lived a fairly decent lifestyle. My daughter assumed that it was because I worked for the Department of the Army. She just never knew that I was a resourceful person, and things that I wanted to accomplish in life, I set goals and I know how to reach them. In fact, I teach other people how to reach goals. That's what I'm very, very good at. She, on the other hand, didn't have that kind of confidence that I could pull this off, you know, coming up with money for two people to go to school. So she went into the Army. The irony of the whole thing is that in basic training, her training sergeant told us when we went to her graduation that she was one of the most mentally tough women that they had ever met, and that they used her as an example for the men. So she was told when she was recruited that she wouldn't have to go to Iraq. She goes to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and once she gets there, then she finds out she's bound to go to Iraq. She was not happy. She was terrified. She also felt like she had been deceived and manipulated to get into the military with the understanding that she didn't have any problem serving her country. She wanted to serve her country, but she didn't want to go to Iraq where people were dying, and she didn't want to get over there, and she didn't want to kill anybody, and she surely didn't want to die. My daughter was in Iraq for 6 weeks, and here's what the major problem, and this is the one thing the Army won't face up to. They allowed my daughter to run around Iraq for 6 weeks without the benefit of a battle buddy. A battle buddy is a person who is commensurable in rank and sex, and you account for each other 24/7. So it was criminal neglect to have a 19-year-old female running around with all those men. Half of them don't know if they're going to live because they're getting ready to fight. And I mean, it was just a horrible, horrible environment. I fussed with Lavina. She called home almost every day. I fussed with her to go to her company commander and ask him for a battle buddy. But she was very disciplined, and she said, I can't tell my leaders what to do. So on the 17th of July, she called home. She told me three things over the phone. Number one, that her unit was going to be rotating back to the States in the next 3 to 4 months, which did happen. Number two, that she had to be in the States for a year, come back over to Iraq, and finish out her time. And then she said, I'm going to college, which is what I should have done in the first place. The third thing she told me was that she was getting ready to start a new job that Monday, which was the 18th, and that she would call us the 19th to tell us what her new job assignment was, provided she didn't get a chance to do that on the morning of the 18th. The morning of the 19th of July at 7:30 in the morning, the Army rang my doorbell and said she died the morning of the 19th from a self-inflicted wound. I launched a preliminary investigation. I found out she had been shot in the head. The Army told me she was found dead in her barracks. That was the last. She was found dead in the contractor's tent. And the contractor's tent was in an area that was off limits to soldiers. When the Army did come, after they found out I had found out she had been shot, they tried to say she stuck an M16 rifle in her mouth and shot herself. And they said the round exited the back of the head. They launched a supposedly 10-month investigation, which we refer to as a mock investigation. And we say that because they collected tangible forensics evidence, but they didn't process it because there had already been a rush to judgment to label this a suicide. The Army spent 10 months preparing the paperwork to justify a suicide. Then they sent me black and white Xerox copies of pictures as evidence at the autopsy center and at the crime scene. I actually wrote them three times and asked them for a colored CD and not black and white pictures. First time I was told I wasn't entitled to it, I wrote them back and I said, yes, I am. According to the Freedom of Information Act, I'm next of kin. My daughter's dead. I got more right to the information than you do. They wrote me back and they said there are other principal parties involved in her death and we have to protect their rights according to the Freedom of Information Act. I wrote them back again. I said, wrong again, because I'm going to be working to get this in federal court because I know I'm not going to get a fair deal from you, and I'm entitled to everybody's name who's involved in this crime. Now, understand something. In preparing their paperwork, the Army redacted or blacked out every name, witnesses and criminal investigators. So, at any rate, I ended up, like I said, already finding out that they had lied. When they didn't give me the colored CD, I went to Congressman Lacey Clay. I filled out a Freedom of Information Act. Sometimes you have to be just plain old blessed. He ended up on the Jessica Lynch, Pat Tillman subcommittee, and when his turn came to speak on that issue, he brought up my daughter. He asked General Johnson to make sure that we got the colored CD. General Johnson agreed on television, but then went to Lacey Clay and told him that I wasn't entitled to it. Lacey Clay went to Henry Waxman, who was the chairperson of that committee, and Henry Waxman ordered the Army to send Congress the colored CD. They sent that CD to me, and then we did a homicide investigation. Now, I'm going to right quick go through the qualifications of my team because that's what's important. And we did this investigation because we already knew how the system works. Some white male MD makes a call that this was a suicide. Now you got the fraternity of pathology or pathology medical people who are not going to go against the one person who made the call. So you can't get a second opinion. So what you have to do is to come up with a support unit to investigate your own crime, and that's what we did. My brother David Johnson is a non-commissioned officer in the Army, and he was for 10 years. He fought in Vietnam. He's a Purple Heart recipient. In addition to that, he was a private detective for almost 30 years. Half of that time, he was a homicide detective. His wife was also a police officer. In fact, they met at a shootout. And I always tease him, why would you marry somebody that can use a gun? But at any rate, yeah. Then my brother, Joseph, has a degree in criminal. Oh, let me go back. David has an associate degree in criminal science, and he has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. My brother Joseph has a degree in criminal science. He was on the Illinois Tactical Unit for 15 years. So between those three people, I've got almost 50 years of law enforcement experience on that team. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, a master's in human relations, and a PhD in psychology. I'm a behavioral expert. I am the psychological profiler for our team. And I profiled the person who did it, and we know who did it. My the other person that's a non-family member, she has a degree in journalism, but she is also a good investigative reporter. She's a news producer, very, very, very bright. So my point being that our team is extremely educated and we're extremely experienced. We came up with Lavina being shot on the top, execution style, top left side of the cranial, up over her left eye and her left frontal lobe. The bullet lodged in her tongue. We got evidence that they went in her chin and took that bullet out. I kept telling the Army her nose was broke. They swore I couldn't see. But we have an X-ray where they did the surgery on her chin and also had a screw in her chin and a screw in her nose. My daughter ended up with a broke nose. She had fractures at the base of her skull, which was a broken neck. She had a dislocated shoulder, dislocated elbow. She had cracked ribs. She had bite marks all over her body. She was set on fire, and then there was an attempt to burn. She was dumped in a contractor's tent that was off limits to soldiers, and there was an attempt to burn that tent down with her body in it. But a female cook saw the fire and went and put it out and found Lavina dead. The Army came to that woman and interviewed her once, and she told them she did not hear a shot. She saw the fire, and she went to investigate and found Lavina dead. She told them, so she was killed someplace else, and they dumped her in that tent and tried to burn the tent down with her body in it. The Army did not interview that woman again. They started pressuring her to keep her mouth shut. They pressured that woman so much that she is now suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. She is stretched out. Christian woman, you know, so they stretched out. In fact, I'm in contact with her therapist. Now, it's been 8 years, and we've been struggling with this for 8 years. I've gone to Congress twice. Lacey Clay has asked for a congressional hearing once, and when they wouldn't give it to him, he stopped. Claire McCaskill's raising hell with the women that's being raped, but not one time did she bring up my daughter being raped and murdered. So what happened is you got Congress hoping that we go away, and you got the Army hoping that we go away. Then we get another young lady who joins our team. She comes up with this idea, okay, we're going to have to keep this story alive until we can wear the Army's tolerance down so that somebody in there will have good conscience and come clean. She came up with the idea on July the 27th, which was Lavina's birthday last Saturday, a international moment of silence at 10 a.m. All over the world. And it happened just like that. It was amazing. The emails that I've gotten with people saying that they were going to participate and how unjust it is. And one thing that one of the local papers wrote is how our effort, that's my wife and me fighting for Lavina, has opened up this Pandora's box, if you will, of this sexual abuse and cover-up that happens in the military. We're not getting pats on the back about it, but people are remembering that we're the ones that sparked this movement. And so this past weekend, we got reassurance, if you will, that people still are concerned about us. The fight for justice is still going on. And one of the local reporters here did just a splendid interview on Fox 2. It was very, very, very well done. And so here it is. It's been 8 years. The Army's done everything to block us. They done spied on us, you know, tapped our phones and tracking devices on our computers. And in lieu of all that, we are yet still alive and fighting. And I vowed, and I did it again on Saturday, that this fight is a long ways from over. So that's where we are as of Saturday, this past Saturday.
Okay. We still have two lines open, and I'm going to open up Dr. Randy Short's, because I'm sure he has something to say. I'm going to open up his mic as well. So, Dr. Jackson, I want you to stay right there. But before we bring Eon, if you're still there, if you have a comment or a question for Dr. Johnson, we're going to bring you back in, as well as Brother George and Dr. Randy Short. But I want to remind everyone, this is why October 25th is so important, family, because there are many cases out there. And, you know, the Male on the Movement, of course, our focal point is specifically dealing with our women and girls. We deal with issues for all of our people, but one of our first and primary things is our sisters. And so what we're saying is for this year's anniversary, we want to make sure that people understand the Male on the March was always to be more than just an event. It was planned that way. It was envisioned that way. And now we're going to demonstrate what we were talking about in 97 and what we're talking about now. And that is to make certain that the voices of our women and girls
are heard in every way possible and uplifted. And so on October 26th, for this year's anniversary, we're going to be at the Justice Department. Dr. John Johnson will be joining us. You heard him say earlier that this was a call for a congressional hearing. And, of course, knowing how these people work, it went on deaf ears at some point because they don't, unless you can show momentum, they don't respond. So we've got to, in all these cases, in Chicago, you have Rokia Boyd, 21 years old, shot in the head by a off-duty cop. So we have so many cases now where it's just dangling, it's hanging. We want people to join us on October the 25th so we can tell the Justice Department, look, we know what's going on. We're paying y'all salaries. We're going to change all of that. So October 25th, we're charging genocide. We're also presenting petitions, letters of complaint, also preliminary briefs to the Justice Department in preparation to file in international court at the UN. Now, for some, they may look at that and go, oh, well, you know, come on, y'all can't do that or y'all not going to do it. Watch us. So with that said, again, this is why we're going to keep bringing Dr. Johnson back because we are preparing these cases. For those of you that have some skills, be it in writing, be it in researching, we have at least 25 cases that we're working on to prepare for October 25th. For women whose voices would never be heard, who have not been heard.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you more insight into that. And lastly, Dr. Johnson, did you say Lavina's birthday, Earth Day, was July 27th?
That is correct.
That's also the Earth Day that we observed Queen Mother Moore. That was her Earth Day, too.
Oh. I can't
even. So in that sense,
yeah. Lavina would have been 28 years old. I can't even imagine Lavina being 28 because she was 19
wow.
when she died.
Wow.
But my baby is 25, you know, so, you
right.
know, we can, I can
right.
look at her. In fact, let me say this, if I may.
Sure.
June the 27th was my birthday, and my baby daughter lives in California.
Mm-hmm.
She popped in on me on the 26th of June. We didn't even know she was coming to town. She popped and came through the garage and popped down in our family room, and I heard my wife yelling at the top of her voice. And it wasn't that kind of yell when there's a roach on the wall, if you know what I mean. So
yeah.
I rushed down, and I go, I know Lakeisha's not down here, and I'd be doggone. She says, I came to be with you on your birthday, and she got it all on YouTube or whoever tube that is, because I don't do that. But she got all it, how she surprised us. Everybody in the world and seen it, you know, but I just don't understand why a father would take those kinds of experiences away from his daughters. I really don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Sister Iya, you have a comment or a question? Mm-hmm.
Yes, Dr. Johnson, right?
Right.
You know, I applaud you. I'm so thankful that you will continue to honor the existence of your daughter in telling her story over and over and over again. And I implore you to continue to do that. I refer to your daughter to my students who want to join the military. I tell them to look your daughter up.
Right.
You know, and to see what happened to her, and not in the sense to thwart them from going, but just to, you know, really bring them into the reality of what can happen once they are there.
Yeah.
And I just want to know, how is your family holding on? Does it still feel like this is something that just happened? Because I know that you keep talking about it, and that's good. You need to keep talking about it. We need to say her name over and over again. Lavinia, right? How you say
Lavina.
Her name?
Lavina.
Lavina,
mm-hmm.
Yes. We need to say her name over and over again because as long as we say her name, she will still, her energy is still here with us as we keep saying her name.
Okay.
So how is your family doing? I want to know. And have you established a scholarship fund or anything in terms of some kind of legacy activity that, you know, will keep, you know, youth, make youth aware of her existence and, you know, to keep her name on our lips forever?
Okay. There are 3 points that I want to make. Number one, I know we're talking about females that's going into the military and the traumatic experiences they're having. One out of every 3 females, according to VA statistics, get raped. One out of every 5 males that go into the military, according to VA stats, get raped.
Wow.
So it's not just women, it's men. The reason the statistics are so low because men just, you know, they just, you know, have a hard time admitting that somebody raped them, you know. And so that's one thing. As to how we're doing, I'm kind of a fighting mad father, and I happen to be come from a family of just some hard-nosed people who we were raised in poverty. We had absolutely nothing. Our mother encouraged us to go to college. We've got 5 college graduates out of 8 that my mother raised by herself. So, that within itself is quite an accomplishment. My daughter, Lakeisha, is the inspiration, if you will, for our family. She went to college. She made it a point of letting people know, I'm going to college for 2 people, me and my sister Lavina. When she graduated, she was walking across that stage. She yells, "Lavina!" Now, my family was there. We all knew what that meant. Of course, a lot of people, they had no idea what she was talking about. Lavina wanted to be a movie producer.
Okay.
Lakeisha graduated from college. She left home. She lives in California. And back here several months ago, we saw her on a commercial, which So she's the one that's keeping the family. And then, like I said, she popped in on me for my birthday. I mean, she is the one that's just keeping the family just excited and hopeful, you know. My oldest son was a gifted student in school. He graduated from high school with a 4.106.
Oh,
he was a basketball player.
Oh,
he went to college on an academic scholarship. He did 2 years, he was a straight A student. He was selected on the National Dean's List 2 years in a row, and he was selected as one of the best students in America twice.
Wow.
But him and Lavina had this mentality that their father had done so much for them that they need to do something to repay me back. And I keep telling them, look, as long as you can take care of yourself, I'm
That's
cool,
right.
You know.
Okay.
John dropped out of college after 2 years and just stung the family, including Lavina. And he pursued a singing career. The boy can flat out sing. He wrote almost 50 songs. He left here and went to Atlanta to pursue his dream. And got up there, and all our so-called Christian friends abandoned him. So he had to come back home. He lost that dream. He started working. And when Lavina got murdered, he was devastated.
Wow.
Because he felt if he had stayed in school and graduated like he should have, he could have helped her go to school, and she wouldn't have had to worry about going into the Army. My son, he has never been the same. He's cool with us. I mean, he yes, sir, and no, ma'am, with us. but it's that anger streak that he has,
yeah,
that combined with I let my sister down, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so he cheers so hard for Lakeisha, you know, it's almost like to
mm-hmm.
a fault, if you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
So he's hurt, and my son Javens is quiet. He doesn't say a lot. He just does. He just, you know, does what he have to do. He works. But every now and then, I catch him coming out of Lavina's room crying, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. My baby boy, Jermaine, they were close, you know, in age and
mm-hmm.
and close. And
wow.
he just, man, I had a picture that was hanging up in my office. And whenever they would go down in the basement, they can see it. I went down there the other day, and they took it off the wall, you know, because they
yeah.
just can't bear to look at it. And
oh.
Jermaine is hurt. He cries, you know, every now and then. We get to talking
uh-huh.
about it. He cries. I mean, these are boys, and
yeah.
these are good men, but their sister is just,
yeah.
you know, just hurt.
Yeah.
You know? My mm. wife... first of all, she got so sick
mm-hmm.
about this that I had to put her under a doctor's care.
Wow.
She lost weight. I mean, she came down with
mm-hmm.
diabetes, high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while there, she really had me nervous, you know. But I talked to her, and I retired, and I kind of dedicated my time to trying to get her back on her feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's
mm-hmm.
gotten to the point where she's a lot stronger. In fact, that interview that was done on Fox 2, she spoke up finally, and we were all so just, you know, elated that she had
yeah.
that. She cried, you know.
Yeah,
she cried. But she got
mm-hmm.
it out, you know.
Yeah.
So there was there's a saying that goes, nothing is more tragic than losing a child. Things are never the same.
Right.
Ironically, that person was General President Dwight D. Eisenhower. So
wow.
that's kind of our state of affairs here. But I vowed to my family, I wanted everybody to go on with their lives, because I told them this was my battle and I was going to fight it until I got justice for Lavina. But
mm-hmm.
it didn't happen anyway, because when you build a close family and something like this happens, this is just the way things are. You know, everybody
mm-hmm.
feels it, and they feel it very, very deeply. As far as setting up a scholarship fund, we tried to do that. We had one set up with the state. We announced it a couple of times. We couldn't get the media here to announce it like they have some white, you know, institutions. So we couldn't get
mm-hmm.
that kind of publicity because of it being the Army, I guess. And then we had it set up, and then the Secretary of the State, I guess that's the person's title, every year you have to renew it, claims they didn't get the paperwork. And so when
mm-hmm.
I submitted the paperwork the second time, I got a letter from them telling me to withdraw all the money out of there, because it was only about $100, and
mm-hmm.
to close it down. So they wouldn't allow us to do that. Then we were talking to an attorney who was going to get it set up for us. All of a sudden got cold feet and dropped us like a hot potato.
What?
So yeah, so and uh-huh. I paid out of my pocket. I paid almost $15,000 in lawyers' fees, and got absolutely nothing for my money, because
wow.
You know they're scared and they get intimidated or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so this is why we've fought to keep the story alive, hoping that if we keep a spark going, eventually
mm-hmm.
we'll start a fire. So that's kind of where
yeah.
we are.
Well, family, unfortunately, we are down to our last 2 minutes, and we'll have to close out. But again, I want to thank Dr. Johnson. And, family, you're going to hear Dr. Johnson back very soon, so be real clear. We will continue this dialogue and continue to give you updates. We are also, of course, talking with our sister, Iya
And as usual, always, sister, thank you so much for, you know, bringing in your energy. Brother George, do we still have you on?
Yes, you do. And
All right. Please take a quick minute. We only got a few minutes, but please, I want to give you a chance to at least say something before we close out.
Okay, just really, really fast. Dr. Johnson, I commend you also, as Mr. Ajawa did, on your tremendous fight for your
daughter, Lavina.
You know to ask Lavina to help you solve this crime, because from the very beginning when you said she was promoted to PSC, I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years, so right there, that sounds like a cover-up.
Yep.
Either she was doing a promotion and never got it, or something happened there to try to make it look good.
Yep.
And
they also offered to bury her in Arlington National Cemetery.
Mm.
A suicide candidate. That was interesting also.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, but it's no way, listening to what your family has done, what the goal she had, that she committed suicide. There's no way she did that.
Right.
She was murdered, and you're right to fight this to the end, and there are people who will help you, and you do have a strong team.
Thank you.
And I hope to talk to you again. And
thank you.
Stay well.
And keep on.
Stay strong.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Brother George, just so you'll know, we're looking at bringing Dr. Johnson to Philly, and we were hoping to get some of the veterans, some of our brother and sister veterans, to help us with that.
Will.
So I'll be talking with you more about that.
Yeah.
Okay, we will.
Yeah.
We'll have them there.
All right, good things. Well, family, I'm sorry, but we have run out of time. Dr. Johnson, again, I thank you so much. My sister, Iya Ajua, much love.
Okay.
And, of course, Brother George, as usual.
Thank you.
We've got our last few minutes. It is time to go. But, family, I want to thank all of you that are tuning in. And we'll be doing our regular program on Saturday at 10:30, same time, same place, live in living color. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can never be any real Hotep unless there is Ma'at. There can be no peace
until there's justice.
As our brother Automatic often say, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. Until next time, we leave you with prosperity, power, also with much love. Love y'all.
Thank you.
Hotel.
Bye-bye.
My eyes, Hotel.
Shavis. Okay.